with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. I am so happy I have two really great guests on today, but before I turn to my guests, I want to remind everyone that, my goodness, can you believe it? Gail Honeyman's book is coming out tomorrow in paperback, and it is quite amazing. Eleanor Oliphant is completely fine. Everybody heard about this book last year when she was on, when the hardback version came out. I said to her, the first thing I said to her is that I know this book is going to be a movie. And because I was a screenwriter, I knew, you know, when I start reading a book and I can see it as a movie, I get so excited. And so I told her at that time that it was going to be a movie. She didn't believe me. And now a year later, just when the paperback is coming out, it has been announced that Reese Witherspoon is going to turn it into a film. And so in 2019, we can look forward to seeing Eleanor Oliphant is completely fine on the big screen. And I predicted it. The minute I read that book, I was three pages in, and I said, someday this is going to be a movie. But I never imagined that it would be Reese Witherspoon. And as a matter of fact, she's going to be in it. She's not going to star because she's not the right type, but she will be in the movie somewhere. And it's really exciting. And this is what I always love, that I get these books in advance, and I get a peek into them, and I get to imagine what they would be like on film. And I can tell you, with my next author, Granville Burgess, I could see his books being turned into a film. And I'm so happy to welcome Granville. Are you there?
I am here, and boy, I hope you're right.
Well, I can tell you, as I said, I'm a very visual person. So when I read, I immediately, if the words move me, I start seeing it as a film. And both of these books, the new book is called Fork in a Crick. And is that the way you pronounce the crick?
Yeah, Fork in the Crick. Yep. Uh-huh.
Okay. And Stone in the Crick, of course, was number one. And this is the second book. And wow, you are amazing. I just love what you have done with this. The characters are so wonderful. And I went, as I was reading the new book, I went back and, I looked at the first book. And I was so touched by the poem that you have at the front of that book. It is such a beautiful poem.
Isn't that wonderful? You know, it's funny. My wife, not funny, but her mother passed away right about the time that book was going into final galleys or whatever. And we found this poem in her Bible. I was like, oh, my gosh, I got to put this in the book. And so it really means a lot to her and me, and I'm glad you like it.
Well, I thought it was just perfect opening for the story that you tell about an Amish woman who falls in love with someone who's not Amish, and it is a challenge. And so you've sort of taken it from your own life and put a lot into it, and then, of course, expanded on many themes. So why don't you tell us about this wonderful character, Rebecca Zook?
Well, I, like all authors, I've fallen in love with my characters. I really love Rebecca because, I mean, she's an artist. She's a quilt maker. And so as an artist myself, I really relate to her. And it's interesting because I never considered this problem before with the Amish. They are so, pride is a sin. And if you point to yourself in any way, like, hey, look at my quilt, they consider it a sin. So she really has a huge problem in that I never considered as an artist myself, because usually you want to be, oh, I'm so proud of my work. So it's an interesting conflict. So I love that about her, or at least her situation and the way she is managing her way through it. Oops. Are you there? Did I lose you?
I'm here. Oh. And exactly. So nice. That of course, now the name Zook is a family name?
Yes, it is, actually, yeah. Uh-huh, on my wife's side.
Well, I thought
the Spooses and the Zooks.
Yeah, well, I thought that was wonderful that you used it, because it is a memorable name. And Well, it's a big story here in so many ways, and it opened my eyes. I had not known too much about the Amish, about this idea of not showing pride, although they're so talented. When I think of the beautiful quilts that they make, it is hard to imagine that they're not standing up there and saying, "I did this, I did this, I did this," because
isn't it amazing? Yeah,
they are amazing.
Yeah, I have my wife Reba Beeson, her grandparents, her parents became Mennonite, but we still go back to her Amish farm all the time. We can look out where she grew up, etc. And stay with her aunt. And so it's just wonderful to immerse myself in the Amish, because I didn't know that much about them until I met Reba.
Well. Now, you are so talented yourself. You have been nominated for an Emmy, and so and of course you've worked in network and cable television, and I dare say that you have a good eye yourself for what's going to play. And I think that, so is this how long a series do you plan to do with this? You're just keep running with it?
Well, I'm going to do a book 3 because I promised myself I would. It's, you know, I've been in the theater my whole life, and I have written some screenplays. They weren't made, but they were bought. Sort of typical Hollywood.
Oh, well, yeah, I could tell you about that. I had 3 of mine optioned, and, you know, in the Hollywood Reporter. So you really think, once they get in the Hollywood Reporter, you say, when they're on a full-page ad in Hollywood Reporter, you say, they are going to get made, right?
Yeah, I hear you, Patsy. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, so I'm going to – these are the first novels I ever wrote. Chickadee Prince Books is going to publish one about Shoeless Joe Jackson next October, and because he's from my hometown in Greenville, South Carolina. So, but anyway, there's going to be a trilogy of Rebecca's books, romances. Yep, one thing I am proud of about this book – forgive me, Amish, for being proud – is weaving in this mystery and this sort of a lot of the Amish novels, I think because they're written by women and I admire them, but they are very good at the emotional part, but they usually don't plot as extensively, I think, as I have in these books in terms of like this threat of killing and this mystery of who the birth mother is and et cetera, et cetera. So happy to, I hope, be distinguished from other Amish novels in that way. I think that's what might make it more cinematic.
Well, I think so, too. And it's exactly that you have really fleshed it out, having the experience in television and in writing plays. You understand the need for drama and the need to have something happening more than just a love story, as sweet as it is. And,
right.
Of course, as you said, your wife's name is Reba, right?
Uh-huh.
And so you have... You know, I love all the sweet parts of the story, but it does have more, as we would say, more legs, so that there's something to run with there. And I think you've done a brilliant job, really, and really right from the get-go. I think maybe that poem inspired you too, because there's something in that poem that is so lovely. Where it starts, God hath not promised skies always blue, flower-strewn pathways all our lives through. God hath not promised sun without rain, joy without sorrow, peace without pain. And somehow you captured that in your book.
Oh, gosh. Thank you so much. I'm so thrilled to hear you say that. I did try, yes. I mean... it was fun to write the sweet parts and fun to write the painful parts and feel like they were true.
Now, I think it's so important, too, that people maybe understand a little bit more about the Amish community and what they're about. So, because, you know, there's this part where we know some things, but I think there are some things that are you... put in this book that really open our eyes to what it means to be Amish. Can you tell us more about that?
Well, as you were saying earlier, many of people who speak to me say, oh, I learned so much about the Amish from your book. I think that's one of the joys that you get from it. I learned a lot about them, too. I think what I've come to admire about them is their, well, I do admire their simple faith. They're just so honest in a way and direct about life. This is typical. This isn't in my book, but I went to a church service last week at my aunt's Amish Mennonite church, and there was a woman there, and she came up to my wife and said, oh, how would you like to come over to lunch? And just spontaneously went over there. There were like 20 people sitting around a table, you know, and after lunch, and so there was all this conversation, and after lunch, people actually retired to the living room and talked to each other. I was like, wow, you know, this never happens anymore, you know. I love the family about the Amish, you know, they actually sit down and talk to each other. They don't break out their cell phones. And it was just so sort of old days, you know. I kind of remember, like, lower pace, you know, as a boy. And I like that about the Amish, this whole family. And they bond so much over food. A lot of that in my book, too. They're so interested in food and how it just tastes and et cetera, et cetera.
Well,
my mother was a terrible cook, so I didn't care about any of that. So that's fun, too.
Well, anyone who's gone through Lancaster County knows that the food is amazing.
It is.
Now, I also didn't know about the Amish, the difference between, well, Amish and Amish Mennonite, which I discovered in this book.
Yes, I didn't either till I, you know, married Reba and got the information. But, I mean, her grandfather, for instance, he was, banished from the church because he wanted a tractor that had wheels on it instead of they have a certain kind of wheel that you're allowed, but it doesn't have, I guess, a rubber tire on it or something like that. Anyway, if you do that, you're supposed to get up and apologize in church, but finally he just said, forget it, I'm leaving church. And so it became Mennonite, which to me I always just define as, you know, Amish he drive, the shorthand version of it. There are many different, that's the other thing, one of kinds of Amish, there's one of them, I just love this name, they're called black bumpers, because they paint the bumpers of their cars black. Everything's black and not shiny and going off and all this, but there's a black bumper on me. Anyway, they're all different kinds of sects, but basically, the Amish themselves, no electricity. You know, you don't see any wires going to their farmhouses when you drive past them. Everything has to be battery powered. That's kind of the major distinction, I think. And you know, they don't have a central church. You know, they have church services at people's houses. They rotate their houses. That's kind of fun, too, or neat. So, you know, you go by these houses and you see tons of buggies out front, and, oh, that's where church is this week. There's just a lot of differences between the Amish and the Mennonite. The Mennonite have a church, for instance.
Okay, could you hold the phone on, too? You're cutting out a little bit. Hold it a little closer.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Sorry, that's better. Because I wanted to mention also, you know, in your books, you have a wonderful way to write about the other characters, and I particularly liked. I thought one of the great characters that you have is Aunt Hannah. what a way to bring in. It's so clever. It's the kind of thing that. One did in olden day movies and, of course, in stage, that you have this character who can say things unexpectedly. So I thought, whoa, this is a clever playwright.
Well, I love Hannah, and that's actually based on Reba's aunt, because she had an illness when she was a child, and she almost died. But so as a consequence, I've got to make sure I'm not walking out of range again. As a consequence, her brain didn't develop completely as it should have. And so she's a little bit, that allows her to just say anything because she hasn't sort of learned, I don't know, the social way to, you know, be correct. So I really enjoyed that. She will say outrageous things. And anyway, so that's another thing that's sort of based on life that I was able to translate into a character that you like, and hopefully everybody does. I certainly loved writing her.
Well, yeah, I think she's delightful, and
she
yeah. is exactly the kind of the kind of character you need in a story. And all of the characters, you really have captured them. And I was going to say, I bet your wife has enjoyed reading these books as you've been writing them.
Oh, yeah, she loved it, yeah. But Hannah's good because, you know, it's hard to get humor into these Amish people. Like, you don't think of them as the funniest people around, you know, because they're sort of serious in a certain way. But, I mean, that's the stereotype. Of course, when you meet them, they laugh like crazy, like anybody else or whatever. But so Hannah was a great way to bring some humor into the story.
She's absolutely perfect. I mean, really, when you're thinking about writing a story that really moves along, you need a character like that. And I thought that was just perfect. Now,
thanks.
You know, I think what you're doing in general, you have a website, and I would love people to go to it, because what I love about you is, and I so believe in little theater, because I think it's so important, or smaller productions where it's more intimate, where people really get to enjoy the actors. I can't stand really any more of these traveling road shows where they come bring Broadway hits, and you're in these audiences with 3,400 people. You can't see the actors, and you have no intimacy. And you are really doing some marvelous work in bringing plays in order to tell history.
Yes, I majored in American history at Princeton University, and I just loved, I don't know, I've always loved to dramatize it. I've been drawn to it. Right now, in fact, tonight, live off Broadway, I'm doing a 25-minute excerpt from this musical I wrote about Frederick Douglass and Abraham Lincoln. And again, it's not a big, huge Broadway. I mean, I hope it goes to Broadway sometime, but it's more intimate story than all of the clips of Book of Mormon, which I love, for instance. But so yes, I am drawn to history, and I'm drawn to the intimate stories and relationships parts of history. I have this company, Quill Entertainment, that it's a nonprofit, does history musicals. We did a lot of them for children because my passion was to get them interested in American history. It used to kill me that they weren't that interested. So we used to take those around to schools and things. Now I'm focused more on my quote adult history musicals. But
well, who knows if, you know, Hamilton was such a success. I think Common Ground, it's ideal, actually, for the time, because it is a fascinating story that a lot of people don't know. And who knows, right?
Yeah, who knows? That's the hope, of course. Yeah, I think it is apt for the time. It so addresses this question of, you know, what's the proper response to injustice? Is it vengeance, or is it finding common ground? You know, I understand why African Americans are outraged about what happens to them. This guy shot in his own apartment the other night. You can't even believe some of this stuff. But you know, what is the right answer to that? So in my musical, I have a massacre of innocent captured black soldiers, which happened in history. So what's Lincoln going to do about it? The question.
And
Douglas.
Exactly, and I think it's a wonderful way for people to learn history with this type of plays that really capture a moment in time, and I hope that it gets these plays get wider range than just in your area, because I think people should just get off their butts, actually, and go to the local theaters where they are putting on plays that just bring art to life. It's wonderful to be able to see actors working and seeing how they can take a story and bring it to life. And I think what you're doing is absolutely fantastic.
Thank you. No, actors are gold. I'm continuously amazed by what they bring to the party, as it were. I was directing a play the other day, and I was like, oh, this should be the ending here. You know, the couple forgives each other, and they go on. And the woman actress said to me, what? I wouldn't forgive him for that. No way am I going to do this. And I was like, gosh, you know, I didn't consider this point of view. Anyway, it's just great because, you know, he helped me see it in a better way. But, yeah, there was a very intimate local thing. Yes, please, go to the theater. I had a great time with my musical Conrack, which I did in Beaufort, South Carolina, which is based on Pat Conroy's novel, The Water is Wide. And anyway, we got to do it in his hometown, and his widow came, and his agent, and his brother, and his sister. And so it was kind of like family time. And so that was really fun. And also, I got, since there's so many African Americans in the musical, we've got to put on stage some children who'd never acted before and church members who'd never acted before. And so it was just this whole great community feel, which you can get in the theater.
Exactly. Well, I think it's wonderful. I think, and I, as I said, I think the books are fantastic. And the first one is called Stone in the Creek, and the second one is Fork in the Creek. You can read them out of order. You don't have to read them in order. And Fork in the Creek is just came out today, right?
Yeah, tomorrow.
Tomorrow. It comes out tomorrow, and people can get it wherever books are sold. And I'm sure that once they get it, they will be as enchanted with your characters. And as you said, because you've added the element of a mystery and horses, I always love books that have anything with horses in it. So it has a great appeal, and I hope that people will get this book and first of all learn something. And one of the things, you know, my next guest is going to be talking about bullying, and we, you know, this is something. It's so really sad that at this time, after, you know, in this day and age, we're in you know, a new century, that people are still not getting the idea that people can be different. I mean, the Amish don't want to bother anybody, and they live one type of life, and other people live other type of life, and there's no need for, you know, all this sort of antagonism that sometimes is built up around people who are different.
Oh, I so agree with you. It's so amazing that you're saying that, Patsy. At church in Lancaster last week, the sermon was on prejudice. And so I'm sitting with all these Amish Mennonites who, you know, kind of homogeneous group, but they were talking just what you're saying about how you got to accept everybody else and accept a different kind of an Amish Mennonite person, or accept, you know, people who are different. Absolutely, gosh. I mean, we have to... Love is the answer. I know it's a kind of a simplistic thing to say, maybe, but I believe it in my heart.
But it is true, and that's why I was particularly taken with the work that you're doing to promote history and to support also understanding Black history, because it's important that we understand it, that we take a look at it and say, my goodness, it's 2018, and soon it's going to be 2020, right. It seems like not so long ago we thought, you know, everyone was going crazy over 1999 and the change of, YK. And it's happened, and we're here, and it's still, after 18 years, we're still like, okay, get over all of these other things.
Get over it.
And just be happy. Find this joy. That's why I call this program Joy on Paper, because you have found the joy on paper of putting your story down and your wife's family story. And I think you've done a brilliant job. And so I want everyone to go to your website. It's called Granville Burgess. By the way, how do you pronounce your middle name?
White.
W-Y-C-H-E. White. I like it. But I wasn't sure if you would pronounce it witchy. And I sort of, I sort of people would do. Like witchy. I thought witchy was cute.
I think witchy, it used to exist without the E. It's old English. It means salt spring, which all these people wanted back when, gathered around a salt spring. So they started being called. I think they were witches then, but then it's now white.
It's white. Okay. But the website is Granville Burgess. .com. People can go there and see about your productions and all of that, and then they can look for your books wherever books are sold. And
yeah, it's published by Chickadee Print.
Yeah, I wanted to mention Chickadee Print because they are wonderful people, and they have also a great website. And if people are looking for a great, great company to work with, Chickadee is one of them. Okay?
Okay, Patsy, I look forward to meeting you someday. I'll see you at the opening of my movie.
Okay, I will be there. Okay. Okay, take care now.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Right, thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Okay. Whoa, he's nice. Oh, I love it. This book is fun. I enjoyed this. Wow. What a story he tells. And it's very romantic. And as I said, there's also some danger in it, and you will enjoy that. Okay, I'm going to take it away. We're going to do a little... That's it. Ed's taking it away from me, which is good because I'm going crazy. Okay.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author? An artist? An inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow. And like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat. I would flip-flop all night long. I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you can move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed. It's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry MyPillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever.
MyPillow is now offering 50% off their 4-pack special.
Support Joy on Paper and local authors. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code PATSY, P-A-T-Z-I, or call 1-800-871-1543. That's 800-871-1543.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z, and I am back, and I am just waiting for a call from Simone Robert, and we're going to be talking about a very important subject, bullying. So I'm looking forward to talking to her. But meanwhile, I want to report on VoucherCon, which was this past weekend here in St. Petersburg. It is the world's largest convention for mystery writers. It was an amazing event, and we were very, very happy to have it here in St. Petersburg at the beautiful Vinoy Hotel. We all had a wonderful time, and for me, it was an amazing revelation. There were so many wonderful, wonderful authors there that I got to meet, and I have a problem. You know, I was just having so much fun, and one of the authors that I think I just fell in love with once I met him was Ian Rankin. Of course, I have read his books, and I was so excited to meet him. And he won; he was awarded the Lifetime Achievement. He was at the event, and he was so wonderful, and I so enjoyed talking to him. And I must say, he hugged me a couple of times, and I said, "Okay, well, I'm never going to wash this blouse again because Ian Rankin has hugged me with it, and he is just delightful." And I hope that he'll find time if he's going to come on the program. And of course, we had one of my favorite local authors was there, Lisa Unger, and she is absolutely fantastic. She was so delightful in everything she did there, and I just want to say that she was in the studio a few weeks ago here with me, and she is so, so funny. And what a wonderful, wonderful author. And what I loved about her is how gracious and kind she was to all of the readers. There were over, I think, over 1,000 people who were readers who come to this convention. So it's not just for the mystery writers. It's the readers who come to meet and to take part in all of the different sessions that the readers hold. It was so heartwarming to see the enthusiasm of the readers and how much they love to meet the authors. And then, as I said, the authors were fantastic and very gracious. And I think of all of them, I thought Lisa Unger was wonderful. Tim Dorsey was great, and he's going to come to the studio sometime next month. And he was amazing. And as a matter of fact, what he did is he treated everybody to alligator bites. So in honor of his books, of course, as you know, all of his books are here and set here in Florida because he loves Florida. So it's always exciting to read one of his books. They're really like tour guides to Florida, sometimes to very strange locations in Florida. And sometimes you might not want to go there alone. His books are always a lot of fun. And so I'm looking forward to having him come in the studio. That was one of the highlights there. Of course, another one, and I'm hoping that she will also be on the program soon, is Sarah Blydell. She was just fantastic. She was in from Denmark. And so I just right across the board, it was just a wonderful, wonderful event. And I was very happy to meet Karen Slaughter there. She's a hilarious person. Of course, she was on the program last week, and I will be posting her interview on my webpage this weekend. Remember, I try to post as many of the interviews as I can on the website, and my webpage is radio-joyonpaper.com. You can go there and click on your favorite authors, listen to the interviews. And remember, one of the things that I try to do and all of the authors try to do is to encourage you not just to read, but if you have a story to tell, whether it's a novel that you have in the back of your mind and you've been wanting to write it for years, or a memoir about your family, all of the authors who were at BoucherCon this weekend were telling people, please write, because one of the things we, as writers, when we are looking for doing research, it is so wonderful to be able to go back and find people's memoirs and to just know about things that happened before. So if you have a crazy uncle, or you have somebody famous in your family, or if you just have an interesting story, maybe from the time that your family first came to America. One of my favorite is a book that if you are going to write the story of your family, you should read, is the book by Trish and Ray Arredondo. It's called Maria's Journey, and it's a book about Ray's mother who came to America, and eventually the entire family came, and about the wonderful, wonderful woman who really was strong and brought her family together here in America. And I'm sure all of you have stories out there that you want to preserve, and all you have to do is write and sit down and start writing, and you never know, you know, what will happen with it. Because this is one of the wonderful things about writing, is that you find this joy that you get on paper. When you see your words coming to life, and it doesn't matter, you know, many of the authors that I speak to, for example, Douglas Brunt. Now, Douglas Brunt, really, he said when he started writing, he was always traveling. And for those of you who don't know, Douglas Brunt is Megyn Kelly's husband. But the interesting thing is that he just sat down in the airports with a yellow notepad and started writing. And that's what you can do, too. So you can just write wherever you are. You don't need a computer, even. You can just start writing and have that joy on paper. And so now I think I have we have on the phone with us, Simone Robert. Simone, is Simone there yet? I'm just waiting for her to get on the line because the interesting thing about this summer, past summer, is I received so many books. And again, here in the fall, I've been receiving so many books about that really talk about the past. And in many cases, people who are writing books talk about their difficult childhood and about bullying. And so I was really happy to invite Simone Robert on today to talk about a subject that we really need to address. Hi, Simone, are you there?
Hi.
Whoa. Okay, now, you know, normally I get authors on who have written a book and it's being released and we're talking about the book, but I actually have so many authors and I have received so many books in the past, really 8 or 9 months, that we're in one of the characters at least has been bullied and it's really affected their lives. So tell us about what you are doing and what you have to say to us about bullying.
Sure, be happy to. So I'm a school crime and safety researcher at CNA Education, and my topic of passion has always been bullying and cyberbullying. Bullying has always existed, and there are many anti-bullying programs available for schools to implement. They need help in the implementation and the evaluation, meaning we need to identify how effective are the programs that are implemented within our schools. Our research has found that ineffective programs are one-off programs that probably occur only once throughout the school year, right now at the beginning of the school year. We've also found that effective programs are actually holistic programs that are built into the school curriculum on a continuous basis throughout the school year, and they are holistic, meaning they invite not only students and teachers to have conversations, but the whole school system and parents and other individuals in the lives of students. Everybody gets together in certain settings to discuss the topic overall. Effective anti-bullying programs stress that silence allows bullying to thrive and that silent witnesses become part of the problem. There are programs out there that utilize role play and acting out scenarios in the school environment that effectively address the bystander phenomenon. Resiliency is something that is taught and should be taught and very, very early on. Effective resiliency building programs foster respect. They teach positive behavior and empathy, social connectedness, relatability, and key to all of this is really communication. Communication from the start. So have conversations with your children early on, discuss what bullying and cyberbullying might look like, share examples of when you might have been a victim of bullying, and how that made you feel and what actions you took, did not take, and wish you had taken. So I was the victim of bullying, and I really have open conversations with my children now about how that made me feel and how I wish I had done things differently.
Now, so when you were a child, you were bullied?
Yes, ma'am, absolutely.
And
it was mainly related to physical appearance, and it was continuous and was repeatedly over several years. I, at the time, was not comfortable speaking up and am now obviously, therefore, an advocate to teach our children that silence is really something that lets bullying thrive, and we really have to combat this as a team and not be silent about it.
Well, I was bullied when I was young. What happened is I'm from the Northern Peninsula of Michigan, and we moved to Detroit. Mm-hmm. And the people in the Upper Peninsula in those days, and even today, we spoke with a little bit of an accent like this because we had like this kind of a accent, and that's how we talk because mostly we're Swedes and Finns, and we talk like that. So there I get to Detroit. Well, you can imagine what they did with that. I'm in third grade, and sure. They are like, whew. Some of the kids gave me a really rough time and would make fun of me. And I did. I got into a fight once. Maybe that's why later on I took up kickboxing. But I did get into a fight, and we should have, you know, you have that expression, don't mess with Texas. Well, don't mess with a youper, because we're raised around bears. We can fight. So the girl landed up with her head in the toilet. But other than that, that was my the only other bully I had was my third grade teacher, who made me sit on my left hand because she didn't believe people should be left-handed. Yeah.
Well
yeah.
That is probably a concern for parents generally. And I think how a child reacts to being bullied and their resilience in the face of bullying can be taught, and it really needs to start early, early on. The earlier, the better. And that's part of what we do at CNA Education. So we advocate really for start as early as possible and take the most effective programs that are currently available and are implemented in elementary school and middle school, since that's where middle school is where bullying is most prevalent, and tailor those programs, like evaluate them to make sure that they are actually most effective in the given environment, because not every anti-bullying program works for every school setting, right? So you need to look at your school environment, your social environment, and your student body, and then tailor your program to actually be most effective.
Now, of course, you know, in the old, I don't know, olden days, not too many years ago, we were encouraged to fight back. And I certainly did. But what are you recommending? What are the guidelines? What are we supposed to do? Kids today are supposed to do if somebody's teasing them. You know, it's funny. I discovered, and this is really crazy, that in England, people still tease children with red hair, and they call them gingers, and they still bully them in England. I mean, what is wrong with them? You know, I was shocked to discover that recently from a writer. So what do you tell children to do?
So research actually shows that bullying back or fighting back is not effective. And I say that because the one thing that drives and bullies thrive on is causing emotional distress. And any reaction that you show, any other reaction than just walking away, shows the bully that they are getting their intended outcome. So fighting back is an emotional reaction, right? And that's something they thrive on. And again, the older they get, the more complicated this whole thing gets from a sociological perspective. But I faced a situation with my daughter, and essentially she just told the bully, you are being a bully, turned around and walked away. And that kid came back a couple days later, apologized for its behavior, and they're playing again. Here we're talking about early elementary school, but fighting back usually just tends to feed into the bullying behavior to continue. And I really think that if the school environment, in collaboration with the research environment, where we have data-driven decision-making, in collaboration with the whole community, having conversations in that realm is the most efficient way to combat the problem.
Because I tell you one thing, I know that in high schools they still have those mean girls who are just, they're mean. They will tease you because your hair isn't the right color, because you're too fat, too skinny, too short, too tall. I mean, it's you would think that they would have watched enough Lifetime movies or something to realize that it doesn't work out in the end. But why are people still like that?
Well, interesting enough, the points that you just raised are also reflected in the data. So girls from the most recent data collections are reporting higher percentages of being victimized. They also report higher percentages of being victimized via cyber or social media outlets. It is most prominent in middle school. However, it is certainly a problem that exists in our high schools. So the earlier we can combat that and follow through an effective anti-bullying program, so through start start in kindergarten and then continue through elementary, middle, and don't stop there, right? Continue through high school, because you are right, it is still very prevalent within high school. Overall, bullying has been very consistent over the past decades. The one thing that has increased is cyberbullying, and that obviously is related to the increased use of social media.
Well, and then there's it comes to really society's ideas sometimes, because we always hear about how a nerd, somebody who's intelligent or wears glasses and is smart, is teased. And it's so stupid when if you tell kids, that is so stupid, because that nerd is probably the one who's going to own Google, Microsoft, or Apple, and someday could employ you or not employ you. So you don't know what, and the sometimes it's funny, the most handsome guy in class, the one that every girl says, oh, he's so gorgeous, you see him, you know, 20 years later, and he's a fat slob, and so you say, were they mean to the nerdy kid, and they were so nice to this guy who turned out to be terrible? It's sort of like when everybody looked at Marlon Brando and he was so gorgeous, but as he grew older, he got really ugly, as far as I'm concerned. So you can't just be nice to people because they might look nice today. Who knows what they're going to look like later? And I suppose if you own Google, Microsoft, is whatever, I suppose you could look whatever you want to look like, right?
there's probably differing opinions on this, yes, but the I think really the bottom line is that if we teach our children not to feed into it and take away the component that the bully really thrives on, that is probably the most efficient way. And again, the only way to do that is to do it in a group setting holistically, as one unit, to combat this problem overall. And social media can actually be quite helpful in that sense too. Of course, there's bullying that that occurs via social media, but we can also encourage our role models nowadays. You know, if you look at the example of some singers or songwriters that are out there that use social media to encourage our students to not pay attention to physical appearances and or what you just described as a nerd, those are messages that we can send, and we can send them in very strong ways. And I think our role models should really utilize that as a means of getting the message out there and having those conversations with our kids.
So are you finding that schools, do 100% of schools now today embrace this type of training with their teachers, with their administrators? Because somebody should have taught my third grade teacher not to be a bully. She was really mean to me.
The majority of schools have some sort of anti-bullying program implemented. Again, some of them only have one-off programs that have proven to not be effective. So what we can do as an external research organization is go into the schools and evaluate the program that is in existence, and then report back to school leadership to say, here's what you have in place, here's why it's not effective. Here's a program that would be easily implemented with limited additional resources, and we can help you shape this program in such a way that it actually has its intended outcome and is effective, and that is obviously then measured in data. So we conduct surveys and focus groups and observations within the class and school setting, and the decisions and the recommendations that we make are based on that data.
And do you also recommend books? Because there are some really wonderful books that address this problem, like Fat Boy Swim by Catherine Ford, and The Reluctant Journal of Henry K. Larson by Susan Nielsen is particularly good, because it really talks about this whole subject and how stupid bullying is.
I would absolutely recommend books. Absolutely. And that's one of the easiest things a parent can do, right? You get books, and there's wonderful books out there. and you read them to your kids, and then afterwards, while you read it, you talk about the topic also. You don't just read the book, but you actually, like, talk about the topic and give examples on how they, so that they can relate to those characters and that they can relate to how that might be applicable to their social and school environment. I would absolutely recommend books. You know, with the increased use of social media, we need to be a little bit more creative on how we can get our kids to use social media to read books as well. But yes, I would absolutely recommend that.
Well, and I do hope that any parents out there listening will understand that you really have to talk about it, because I, as I said, I was so surprised that I was really shocked, actually, when I discovered that people, because I had lived in England, and that's like 25 years ago, and I knew that people were teasing, you know, redheaded kids. And I thought, well, this is ridiculous, because, you know, you have a, it's so beautiful. I always liked red hair. And so to discover recently when an author was saying, oh, yeah, this is a big problem. Everybody was teasing me and saying I was stupid because I had red hair. Now, where it correlates, I don't know what people are, you know, what's wrong with people. But it's awful. It's awful. And I think you're doing wonderful work. And perhaps what you have to do is write yourself your own book for children and come back on the program, okay?
That sounds like a fantastic idea. I would love to do that. And I will most certainly take you up on that offer once my book is done.
Well, are you working on one? I hope so.
I am not. So far, my research has only been in, like, academic journals. I did examine anti-bullying laws, but a children's book is a fantastic idea.
Well, I think it's wonderful. Now, I'm going to ask you, what is your accent?
Oh, I was born and raised in Germany. I'm half Scottish and half German.
Well, I picked up the Scottish because I was just talking to Gail Honeyman, you know, who is from Scotland, and I thought I saw that. It's perfect. And of course, lots of redheaded people in Scotland. So, you know, I'm glad that...
Absolutely true. My red is coming out also, and I can relate to the bullying as well. I was bullied because of my accent, so...
Well, I love your accent, and that's what makes life wonderful, to have all this diversity of people. And it was so wonderful to talk to Gail Honeyman with her accent, and you with your accent, and me. I don't have my up north accent anymore, but I'm okay, and I don't mind. Anyway, it was great talking to you. Take care now.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, bye-bye now. Well, see, everybody, this is one of the joys of life, is to see your words on paper, hear them spoken in an audible book, or now maybe I have encouraged Simone Robert to write a children's book about bullying. So don't bully anyone. Be kind. Say something nice to somebody. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room, because I have made him do a lot of stuff today. I've been really busy here, and he salutes me. I salute him, and he's always so, so wonderful. People, we have to start sending him fan mail, because he's wonderful. Thanks for the mail that I'm getting. Bye-bye now.